Hi all, this is Ian.
And this is Lauren.
Before we get started today, we wanted to get all of our plugging business out of the way up front.
I do not like it when you say plugging business, Ian.
Neither do I. As hopefully many of you have heard us talk about before on this podcast, Lauren and I have been working on our first narrative audio drama, The Vanishing Act.
Actually, it's a comedy, but yes. It is a weird and wild dive into the 1930s and features some of the guests you know and love from Not Another Film Podcast as over-the-top characters in pursuit of answers to a mysterious disappearance.
Spooky. The first episodes are out now on all of your podcast providers, so please give us a download if you like what we do here.
And if you listen to and enjoy the show, please make sure to leave us a review of some kind on whatever your preferred podcast platform is. A star-based review, actual written critique, and word of mouth are all still the best way to get a young baby bird podcast to grow into a giant dragon eagle with full-fledged sponsors.
All of that was incredibly transparent. So yes, please, while you're listening to us gab about our favorite movies from childhood, subscribe to The Vanishing Act and leave us a review. And, like I promised before on this show, if you also want to leave us a review for Not Another Film Podcast, I'll read it on air. I'm not above it.
He's not. So, again, the plan is to head on over to your podcast provider, subscribe today, and then let us and all of your in-person and digital friends know what you think about The Vanishing Act.
And one more time so it's burned into your brains,
The Vanishing Act.
And now, back to this week's episode.
It's so good! Ian!
And on that note, folks, welcome to another episode of Not Another Film Podcast. This is the podcast where we take movies we used to love as kids and we re-examine them in the harsh, sobering light of 2020. My name is Ian Gears. I am one of your hosts.
I'm Lauren Thompson. I'm the other host.
And we are here today to talk about the 1998 animated film.
Film!
Quest for Camelot. This movie has come heavily requested.
Yes.
This is heavily requested for Camelot.
It's been heavily requested by me.
Yes. As well as a couple listeners have reached out. More than one listener has reached out about this movie.
Because they have good taste.
And also because it is streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, you're welcome, world.
Yeah, thank God I didn't pay for this. Yeah, so, wow. This movie is fucking wild. There's so much to talk about. Genuinely, there's so much to talk about.
So much there. So much to unpack. So much to examine. To self-examine. So much to jam out to.
So much to make out with your, you know, attached brother with.
Yeah.
So much to...
So like, talk about like a list of movies. Like, we need a recommendation list. Like, list of movies to watch with your conjoined twin who you like sort of have sexual chemistry with.
There's the easiest recommendation at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most obvious recommendation at the end of this.
Ooh, I'm interested.
That involves so many aspects of this movie.
Ooh.
And we'll get to it.
Is it Tangled?
In a way. There are a lot of plot points that are tangled in it, but yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the vibe is very Tangled.
I think it wishes it got there. Yeah.
I think Tangled is a natural evolution of this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Lauren, I guess I'll start with you. What's your first experience with Quest for Camelot?
I couldn't even tell you what my first experience was.
This,
this movie's
wild.
Like most movies that were around this time of my life, I don't remember when I first saw it. I don't remember ever there being a time where this movie wasn't in my life. This cassette, what is it? Oh my God. Is
VHS?
VHS!
Jesus Christ.
It's been a long, long week.
Really has.
It really has, and I'm giddy, and I'm in a weird headspace. The VHS was on heavy rotation in my childhood home. The songs have just permeated into my brain, and I didn't realize how much of this movie was seared into my brain until we watched it today.
Mm-hmm.
And it all came back, and I started jamming out to, like, 50% of the songs. And I say 50%, because half of them are garbage, and half of them are guilty pleasures.
If it's a patter song, it's a guilty pleasure.
We know Ian loves a patter song.
If it was sung by a recent Oscar winner.
Yeah, there was a point in this movie where they say trouble with a capital T, and I was like, wait, is this about to happen?
And it didn't.
And it didn't, and I was disappointed. So I did it myself.
Yeah.
I stopped the movie, and I started doing it myself, because I love patter songs.
Yeah, I don't remember the first time I saw this movie either. It was like, again, it feels like one of those movies that it's like it's always been in my life, but it was never.
It's always there.
Yeah, but it was never one that like I relied on a lot. Mm-hmm. And looking at a little bit of the research surrounding this movie, it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
As to why, because I think like we were a huge Disney animated Disney household, mm-hmm. especially Disney Renaissance 90s, early 2000s. That was really, really big for us in our house. And there was a little bit of branching out, but I didn't really come to appreciate the movies that were coming out from other studios, like the DreamWorks animated movies or the Warner Brothers animated movies, which is this is a part of, mm-hmm. until much later. Because this movie is flanked on either side by some fucking weird films.
Yeah, this is DreamWorks, right?
This is Warner Brothers.
Really?
Since defunct Warner Brothers animated films department. Wait, they don't do animated feature films anymore.
And DreamWorks did Prince of Egypt, right?
DreamWorks did Prince of Egypt and Road to El Dorado.
Was it a similar team? Because I feel like the character designs on the faces are so similar to what ends up happening in Road to El Dorado, although also Road to El Dorado, but specifically Prince of Egypt.
They must have had similar capsules for those characters.
Yeah, because they definitely resemble the characters of the DreamWorks films in terms of, like, the humans. The humans look
They all have thumbs that are, like, 90 degrees. Yeah, you know, like those people.
And, like, the faces are more jaw-heavy. Like, they're a little more angular.
Everyone has a great jaw.
Yeah, like, the male faces are all, like, long faces.
Yeah, they all look like commas.
Yeah, and all of the girls kind of are, like, Uncanny Valley to me.
Huge eyes.
They look like the same girl, like, copy-pasted, just with, like, different hair.
Same eyes, same body type. Same
exact body type. It's just copy-paste.
Yeah, you could go up to Kaylee's mother in this movie and do the whole, like, oh, I didn't know Kaylee had an older sister routine.
You
and
you
legit probably could be right, because they look exactly
if
the same
throughout this whole movie. If you put, like, young Kaylee... like, young adult Kaylee, and that's the majority of this movie, and then her mom, they would just look like an age-progressed version of the same character.
Juliana!
Kaylee! It's also, can we just, I already just want to talk about how wild it is that her name is Kaylee.
Her name is fucking Kaylee.
It is a fucking Arthurian legend, and by the end, it's like Sir Kaylee.
I can't, because
Garrett of... Garrett and Kaylee are the two leads of a movie that is about, like, the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, let's be happy about, you know, ding dong, the administration's dead, but, like, I can't help but think about Kaylee McEnany when I hear that name, unfortunately.
Ruined the name forever. It's ruined. Forever.
I know friendly Kaylees. I know nice Kaylees in my life, but that's just ruined it for me. And because it's been on the news so much this week, I'm just literally like, all I'm thinking of when I hear that name is just kind of like, you fucker, you're out of a job.
In case you couldn't tell, we are recording this on November 8th of 2020.
The day before
we drop it. For posterity, in case you're going through our back catalog, if you'll notice a shift in the tone, that's why.
So... this movie was, the 80s was really interesting for Warner Brothers, because they were essentially just doing, like, Batman the Animated Series, which was dope. It's a great series. If you haven't seen it, it's really, really wonderfully done. But then in the 90s, because of how popular Disney Renaissance films were, they were like, we got to get into the feature film game, baby! This shit's gonna be fire for us. And of course, they couldn't capture the same magic that Disney could.
No.
Mainly from what I've been reading, because they didn't know how to run the business. Apparently, this movie had been in development since like 95. It's based on a book that came out in the 70s by Vera Chapman called The King's Damsel. And I was reading a little bit about what the book's about. It shares very little in common with the book. and apparently a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were like, we want to make this big Arthurian, animated like movie. Mm-hmm. And the original director that was attached, Bob Croyer, was like, yeah, cool, this is going to be dope. Our whole thing is going to be that we're going to make darker shit. That's why we did Batman. We're going to make darker movies. But then they're like, nope, we got to do it a certain way. We got to have musical numbers. We've got to have,
because, like, that's not this.
A spunky female protagonist.
We've got to have girl power. Come on.
We've got to have all this stuff. And so we've got to Disney-fy the fuck out of this movie.
We've got to have a, like, last-minute love story that makes no sense.
Holy shit. We've got to have sidekicks that have nothing to do with the movie.
Not just one. You get, like, three.
Holy shit, it's awful. But, so the 90s...
There are four animal sidekicks in this movie, Ian. Four. Three good guys, one bad guy.
I'll put it like this, Lauren. Everybody in DreamWorks Animation was put on this movie.
WB or DreamWorks?
Oh, sorry, WB, you're right, okay. Thank you. Everybody on WB Animation was put on this movie. Then they started making another project around the same time. Mm-hmm. It was an idea to kind of take what Robert Zemeckis had created with Who Framed Roger Rabbit and blend live action and animation. And it was a movie based off of a commercial called Space Jam. So everyone essentially got so much more excited over the idea of working on Space Jam that they all left this movie.
Oh, no.
So this movie changed leadership several times. It changed writers several times. That's why there are four credited screenwriters on this movie.
Yikes.
And storyboard artists. It's like there were so many people that were apparently working on this movie that jumped ship to go work on Space Jam instead. So Space Jam came out in 96. This movie then got a whole Disney rewrite, like we said. They wanted it to come out in 97, but they were afraid of it playing against the holiday juggernauts like Alien Resurrection and Home Alone 3.
Yep.
So it came out in May of 1998, right before the next Warner Brothers animated offering, which is a little movie that some of you may know that we will maybe be doing on this podcast soon, called The Iron Giant, which is a classic film. It is one of the best animated movies.
Same team did this in The Iron Giant?
You can easily tell where the drop-off was.
Oh my god.
They did Space Jam. They did this. They did The Iron Giant. They also did, after Space Jam, they also did The Pagemaster.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
And then in 2001, after The Iron Giant, they did Osmosis Jones.
Okay.
Definitely doing that soon.
Yep, that'll be coming.
And then the entire division pretty much went under after a movie that came out in the early 2000s called Looney Tunes Back in Action, which is a movie that I admit I do not hate. Mm-hmm. But here we are with Quest for Camelot. With the redheaded stepchild, the thrown out carcass.
The two-headed dragon.
The two-headed dragon of the Warner Brothers Animation Division. Baby.
Oh, this movie's a mess.
This movie's a fucking mess.
This is a mess. I love it.
Okay, so why don't you kick us off? Do you want to start the story?
This movie's a messy bitch. Sure. So where are we even starting this movie?
We can start with the beginning, with Sir Lionel and his wife.
That's right, Sir Lionel.
The actual knight from the round table, so it's not...
Sir Lionel. I know, but he... they chose the most modern-sounding name, and then we're like, let's give... Kaylee, it's good enough.
Yeah.
So, Sir Lionel is there with his wife, Juliana, and his daughter, Kaylee.
Kaylee.
Not short for anything, just Kaylee.
And his daughter, Bex.
Yeah. And she's like... She's not like other girls. She wants to be a knight like her dad.
This idiot.
She's a cool girl. And then her dad, unfortunately, has to tell her the story of King Arthur before he leaves to go back to the round table.
To which you had a great observation.
To which I said, he's super dead.
He's super dead.
He's dead from second one.
He is a nice parental figure.
Yes.
He is out. You can't have two. You can't have two.
No.
That's just greedy, Kaylee.
Yeah, no. So he was super dead from second one. So he had to tell the story of King Arthur. And how he pulled the sword from the stone, the story we all know.
Yeah.
And then he heads off to Camelot.
Yeah, he's straight up like, sweetie, I got to go to Camelot. Which begs the question, since tons of people live in Camelot, of like, why don't you just move your family to Camelot?
Why don't they just live in the suburbs of Camelot?
Straight, okay, so here, this will tie into...
There were families living in Camelot. It's not like they don't even seem like they were working a farm or anything. And even if they were, he's providing for them. He's a fucking knight.
Their house seems to be a straw hut with a rock in the back.
You are a knight of Camelot.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
And you're commuting?
Even like when...
What? You're living in Jersey and commuting into the city every day? This is bullshit.
When Ned Stark became Hand of the King and had to go down the King's Road to King's Landing to serve on Robert Baratheon's cabinet, he took his two daughters with him.
Yes.
And was like, I want to, you know, he's like, I can't move my family here because I'm the Lord of the North. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. We need to have a Stark in Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. That is not the case.
That is not the case here.
That's not the case here.
Sir Lionel, from what I understand, knows two people, and their house legit does not even have RCN internet.
No.
You could straight up back up your family.
Their life seems exponential. exponentially worse where they are.
They're pretty much like Bedouins. Like, they just like, you can get up and leave. Get up and move wherever you want. You're a nomadic family. You guys are an RV family. You just get up and go. Go to Camelot. And like,
And Kaylee very reasonably is like, yo, can you just take me with you? Like,
also, it's straight
there's up... There's no reason you should... They don't have babysitter, they don't have childcare in Camelot. Yes, they fucking do.
Yeah, and it's...
Merlin isn't doing shit this entire movie. You're telling me Merlin couldn't chill with a kid for 5 minutes?
Merlin's chilling in the green room for all 85 minutes of the runtime of this film.
Merlin does nothing in this film. Merlin's fucking hawk does more in this film. He straight up outsources that shit to, like, birds.
Yeah. That's how you know that the stakes of this movie aren't that bad.
Yeah.
So they're like,
They're like, fuck, Merlin, shit, he could definitely solve all of this in 1 second. He just doesn't want to?
Yeah.
We're gonna go with that. He just doesn't want to.
He's also designed to look evil. Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
He looks like a shapeshifter took over Merlin and is, like, infiltrating.
Yeah, the stencils of the male figures in this movie, they
all
have two...
All look creepy.
Well, yeah, they all are creepy. Yeah, that's a major thing. But they have two... They have two designs of the face, right? Mm-hmm. You have this kind of, like, oval, kind of soft-edged look mm-hmm. with eyes that are, like, wide.
Wide, yeah.
With wide eyes, like King Arthur has.
Yes.
Or, like, Sir Lionel has.
A more, like...
Lionel, yeah. Who, by the way, looks a shit ton like Matthew Barry in What We Do in the Shadows.
To me, he looked like Shrek in human form from Shrek 2.
There's another figure in this movie that looks more like Shrek that we'll get to.
Well, multiple people can look like Shrek, Ian.
Yeah. So you've got that figure... Or you've got the figure where the eyes are, like, sunken in.
And terrifying.
And terrifying. And the face kind of looks like a butt that goes down to a villain. It's like a Jafar goatee. Yeah. So you've either got that. You've got soft boy features.
Yes.
Or...
Who doesn't love a good soft boy?
Yeah. Or you're looking like Jamie Campbell Bauer. Like, it's... Jamie Campbell Bauer actually looks like the human version of one of these stencils.
Jamie Campbell Bauer looks so much like Garrett.
He should. He should play Garrett.
In the live action reboot of Quest for Camelot.
Come on this show, Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Jamie Campbell Bauer, we're big fans.
We stan you.
We watched that entire Will show for you. And you were great.
Inspire me! Let's do it.
You look like a skeleton, but like a sexy skeleton.
Yeah, you are. You are a sexy skeleton.
Spooky, sexy skeletons.
Fun fact, every skeleton in the Killer's Bones video is played by Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Oh, man.
Remarkable IMDb on that guy.
You want the range. Truly the range.
He has more lines in that music video than he has in all of Twilight. Anyway, let's get into it. He's got... So when we get to... Camelot, which again is a city, it's populated by people. Lionel's just like, I can't mix work and play.
It also seems like there's plenty of room. Yeah. There's plenty of room. There's apartments available.
This is clearly a second family situation, right? Oh, yeah. He's got a second family
absolutely.
In Camelot.
Absolutely. Arthur is definitely letting that happen.
Yeah, he's like, don't worry, Lionel, I won't tell Juliana about you.
Juliana! Yeah. So yeah, Lionel ends up back. I guess he took his like 3 weeks PTO and is now back.
Yeah.
And immediately shit breaks out. At
like
the
first meeting back.
Legit, like, hey guys, how was your break?
Everybody go around the table.
And tell me what you did on your break.
Yeah, tell me one fun fact about your break.
I personally went waveboarding. What did you do, Lionel?
Well, I taught my daughter how to sword fight. And by sword
Which
fight...
Which daughter again? Is this Family 1 or Family 2?
This is Family 2. Her name is Kaylee.
Kaylee, that's right.
Family 1 is my blind son, Garrett.
And his sister, Maylee.
Not very creative. It's Arthurian times. We named the time after you.
Okay, so at this meeting, a fight immediately breaks out. Like, one dude is obviously spent the entire break, like, stewing. It's like he spent this entire time just like, I'm stewing. What's his name again? Starts with an R.
His name, Lauren, is
Lord Oldman.
Is Lord Ruber.
Lord Ruber. How does this man ever get a job at the round table?
You know those people... That you look at them and you just go, oh, you're evil.
He has, like, stringy hair.
Ruber killed that guy.
There was a guy who got this on his own merit, and he just straight up stabbed that guy and said, now I'm Ruber.
We're not gonna post a picture, because I just want to describe what this man looks like.
Let's paint the picture.
Ruber is, he's very top-heavy. He's got like real little legs, but he's got a huge ripped torso.
He's Dorito shaped.
Dorito shaped Chris Evans torso.
Yes.
He's got red hair that goes down to his shoulders.
It's very stringy. He's got kind of like a half bang situation.
Oh, no, Lauren. He's got a skullet. He has a red skullet. He is wearing copious amounts of eyeliner.
So, not just eyeliner, eyeshadow. He's doing the eyeshadow look above his eye and below his eye. It's just like...
He looks purple. Like a raccoon.
It is purple war paint, but like a nice mauve.
Yeah.
It's like he's blending. He's definitely blending. He's making an effort.
He looks like a buff version of the bad guy from Pocahontas.
And he desperately needs a manicure.
He's also tweaking the entire movie. His eye is twitching the whole film.
Constantly.
At one point, his eyebrow does the wave. And he legitimately...
I'm so tickled by this movie.
He's voiced by Gary Oldman, as we've said.
Oscar winner Gary Oldman.
And Gary Oldman, God bless him, fucking... Gary Oldman, A, does not know how to not go for it.
No, he's never not.
Yeah. If you're ever doubting it, like, go back and watch those Nolan Batman movies. Oldman's doing a lot in those movies. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah.
But he's doing, like, he's, every other word is yelling.
Mm-hmm. He is, like, legit from second one, Arthur's like, yo, what's going on?
Why did I let you in my round table?
What movies are going on? And he's straight up like, why am I not the ruler of the world yet? And Arthur's like, okay, well, that's not really how that works. And he's like, all right, I'm gonna fucking murder you. Straight up takes out a weapon and tries to murder Arthur on the spot.
To which I say, Arthur had it coming. And here's the reason. Because, like you said, they just got back from 3 weeks PTO.
Yes.
Right? So it
seems like the benefits package is really good, all I'm saying.
Arthur treats his employees well.
Yeah. So how did he have it coming? Tell me.
Because they had all this time off. You're trying to tell me that the idea that Ruber brings up about, like, I should be the ruler of Camelot, I'm the most likely to do it, I'm the most powerful, blah, blah, blah. You're trying to tell me that the way he presents that idea in this movie, where he kills a man, mm-hmm. is the first time he's brought that up?
Yeah.
He's definitely proposed this before, because he even brings it up. He's like, I think we should vote on who should be the new king. I vote me. Because his favorite word in the movie is me and mine.
Yes. He has a whole song about it.
Yeah, it's weird. But so he brings that up constantly.
Yes. You're right.
They just took a 3 week PTO, mm-hmm. which is opportune time for any CEO of any business
to organize a coup
or to let go of troubling employees.
Yes.
You let go of Ruber because I don't care how helpful he was in getting you this, you know, position as king, which I'm sure he was. The dude is incredibly resourceful.
All Arthur had to do was pull a fucking sword out of a stone.
Yeah, as like a stringy little wimp boy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so all I'm saying is, The writing's on the wall with this guy.
Yeah.
You take one look at him, you go, you're evil. Like, this is Arthur's fault for employing him.
Yeah.
So, I just don't think...
Anytime someone has to, like, give, like, okay, everyone gets to announce their projects. Like, okay, I want to start a community garden in Camelot. Like, I want to start mandatory movie nights. Like, I want to be king.
Yeah, he's like, I want to be king. And they're like, ha ha ha, very funny, Ruber. He's like, no, legit, I want to be king. Here's my 4-point plan. And he's like, point number one. Let's expand the marketplace. And they're like, no, Ruber, we don't want you to be king. This happens so often that by the end, he doesn't even have any ideals anymore. He's mm-hmm. legitimately just, like, hanging out. I've got my ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And my ideas now boil down to one thing and one thing only. I want to be king.
Yes.
But yeah. So that's
pretty much. So he attempts to kill Arthur. He does not succeed. The only person he kills is...
Lionel.
Is Lionel. So through falling down, I guess?
Sheer brute fucking force from this
Lionel
Dorito
just, like,
shape.
Straight up falls down and just dies.
Again, Lionel fakes his death to be with his second family.
Yeah.
He finally chose.
We do never see the body. We see him, like, struggling.
No, they
on
take
the
body back to,
allegedly.
To the RV.
You never see that body. So they take his body back. Kaylee's like, oh my god, what, dad is back? He's not. He is in a way.
There's the coolest moment here, though, when they bring the body back and Arthur arrives with the dead body
mm-hmm.
to talk to Juliana.
Yeah. Arthur's pretty chill.
It's a good move from
like
Arthur.
Maybe Arthur should stay in Camelot given that there is a man actively trying to take over the entire kingdom, and Arthur is just gonna like roll out with every single knight that he has.
The hubris of kings.
Leaving no one behind.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's straight
Seems
up dumb.
Seems a little bit like a little bit of a tactical error, but sure. And then we get the time lapse of Kaylee growing up and becoming a cool kid, and she sings this song called My Father's Wings.
Yeah, Wings Like My Father. My father's wings.
It's a classic I want song.
Do you want to talk about the music in this movie? Or
I don't even know where to begin because every song is different from the last, and it is...
And yet it all sounds the same.
Yeah, it does. And then I would disagree with that, but yes. This is a very classic ballad. It's one of the better songs in the movie.
Yet, not the one... We should mention, folks, at the outset...
I think there are, like, three decent songs in this movie.
Well, this is an Academy Award-nominated movie.
Really?
For Best Original Song.
Which song?
For the song The Prayer.
Yeah, I know, because Celine Dion sings it. Of course. Yeah. They knew that if Celine sang it, they would get a fucking nomination, even though it's the worst song in the film.
It's not just Celine Dion. It's also Andrea Bocelli.
So the Andrea Bocelli version from the credits got nominated, or the Celine Dion version got
nominated?
They
do one together.
They do?
Yeah.
When?
I don't know, but all of South Florida lit up when that happened.
Put that shit in the film!
Every person who lives in Boca Raton had that blasting on their Lexuses when they were driving around.
Because no one sounds like they're, because all of them have different singing voices than acting voices. So, like, they should have just had Ghost Lionel sing it with Juliana, and just had Ghost Lionel's voice be Bocelli.
We're also, like, not mentioning, I don't know why we're not mentioning this, the voice of Lionel, for the six lines Lionel has, is fucking Gabriel Byrne.
Yes.
The voice of Juliana is Jane Seymour, and the voice of King Arthur is Pierce Brosnan.
Yep.
So, yeah, this movie is weirdly stacked.
And that's before we even get to the animals in this film.
Yeah, it's before we get to Gary Oldman as Lord Rhubarb. Mm-hmm. And fucking Cary Elwes, who shows up.
Yep.
It's just, it's a wild ride from start to finish.
And again, Juliana's singing voice is Celine Dion. It is jarring.
It's not great.
Is that the only song that got nominated? What else got nominated?
That was it. Won the Golden Globe for Best Original Song.
For The Prayer?
For The Prayer.
That's bullshit. It should have been I Stand Alone.
So we get
I Stand
over.
Alone's a genuine jam, and like you can pry that from my cold dead hands.
Jesselyn Gilsig?
Gilsig, I think? Yeah.
Gilsig? From Glee fame.
Glee fame, yeah. She plays Mrs. Schuster. So she plays Coach Shue's wife. Who is
Matthew Morrison?
Matthew Morrison's character is, like, she's like the blonde woman that's his wife at the beginning.
Okay.
They don't last, spoiler alert.
Wow.
But she hangs around.
I was just about to start Glee.
Oh, sure you were. Please tell me more and more about how much you've been wanting to get on Glee.
I can't wait to listen to, like, versions of songs I love, but worse.
Damn, I'm so bummed that Glee didn't stay around long enough to do a Quest for Camelot episode, because they were getting real deep into the back catalog of just, like, childhood. They were really digging deep.
If you haven't seen the Tiny Toon Adventures episodes of Glee...
One of my favorite things is to just, like, look around and be like, God, if Glee was on, that song would be covered. Like, there would have to be a WAP episode.
Fucking no.
Oh, there's been more uncomfortable shit that's been on Glee. There's some wildly inappropriate things that have been done on Glee.
Who would play the two sibling dragons who have to make out?
Oh, definitely Kurt and probably Mercedes.
I don't know who these people are.
Kurt and Mercedes, definitely.
Don't know who they are.
Trust me, people who listen to watch Glee, they know that I'm right. It would absolutely be them. Although, maybe, nope, I'm right. No, I stick by it.
No, you know what? I'm right.
Wait, let me self-examine? Nope, I'm right.
All right, let's get into like the actual plot mechanics of this movie. Here's the thing, though. We're done talking about the most interesting part of this movie. The rest of this shit is like, when the quest for Camelot, when the titular quest begins, it is so fucking boring. Because Rhubarb, okay, again.
Every time it sounds like you're about to say rhubarb.
So rhubarb pie, Lord Rhubarb Pie. Instead of getting it himself, he outsources his work like a good boss. Mm-hmm. He sends in an employee, a mystical griffin, to crash into the round table, not kill anyone, but just steal Excalibur from King Arthur.
Yeah, and just peace out.
And guess what? The guy gets it done.
Gets the job done.
You hire a pro, you get a pro. This yeah. Griffin knows what's up. The Griffin is voiced by Bronson Pinchot from fucking Perfect Strangers.
And this Griffin fucking flies off. And then the Griffin, like, Arthur goes straight up, like, get Merlin. He'll take care of this. Merlin's like, I'm good. I'm going to send my Falcon to do it.
Because, again, Merlin looks sketchy as shit. Merlin's he looks lazy. Like Sauron.
He's lazy as shit. You mean Saruman?
Saruman. You're right. You're right.
Get it right.
No, you're right. Thank you.
Have some respect.
I'm sorry.
And yeah, he sends out his, is it a hawk or is it a falcon?
It's a falcon. Falcon. There's a whole discussion about this.
Silver winged falcon.
Yeah. The name of the falcon is, Silver Wings.
He sends him out. Silver Wings gets the job done. Does that interception. Doesn't actually manage to like grab
The no, thing. just is able to, like, tickle the griffin so tickle that he lets it go. He
just drops it into the forest, and then Silver Wings is like, I'm good. I got my job done. I'm just gonna leave it there. So it falls into the Forbidden Forest.
Not to be confused with the Forbidden Forest from Harry Potter.
Yeah, and then everyone just sort of gives up for a little bit and leaves it there. The griffin goes back to report and is like, I'm sorry about that. Didn't get it done.
Yeah, to which Rhubarb's like, well, where the fuck is it? And he's like, oh, it's in the Forbidden Forest. And he's like, okay, cool, should've led with that. Don't worry, I'm a man of action. I'm gonna go grab this thing.
Yeah, and then the next thing you see Rhubarb do is not go to get it. It's go to Juliana and Kaylee's place and kidnap Kaylee's mom.
I think we may be putting this out of order. I think he finds out that the sword was in the Forbidden Forest after
That's
he
right,
already gets the mom.
Because Kaylee overhears it.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so he goes and kidnaps Kaylee and her mom. This is 10 years later, so I don't know why he specifically targeted them.
It makes no sense, but they do the whole appeal where it's like, oh, a good person's wife was obviously fucking around with a scary villain before she settled down with a nice guy.
I don't think that's very much. I think he just has a thing for her.
He's got a thing for her.
But the plan that he
makes
puts
sense.
Forth,
it's Jane Seymour. She's a beautiful woman.
The plan that he puts forth is basically that they are going to kidnap her. She is going to be at the front of a caravan that is secretly filled with Monstars, and because everyone in Camelot
weapon
knows
men.
And because everyone in Camelot knows her.
You know, because she lives in Camelot. They know her because they're like, oh shit, that's Lionel's second wife. She's here. The reckoning has arrived.
It's weird because I don't think she has ever been to Camelot because Kaylee's never been to Camelot. He's never brought his family to Camelot.
No, because you gotta keep work and play separate.
So she's just gonna be a random lady. He could have just gotten a random lady.
Well, he gets her because he says, I need you. This is where the fucking movie breaks. My brain. He says, I need you to show me the way to Camelot. He used to work in Camelot.
He came from Camelot.
You legit, I guess it's been 10 years, but my guy, you don't remember how to get to Camelot?
You came from Camelot. Just turn around and go back the way you came, my guy.
It seems like there's two ways to get to Camelot. You travel the King's Road, or you travel through the Forbidden Forest. So you're essentially going up 95, or you're taking fucking, like, state roads. I'm pretty sure it's a straight shot if you take 95, dude. You just go straight up. It is right there.
Also, I can't emphasize enough, she has never been to Camelot.
And I can't emphasize enough, you used to work in Camelot. You know exactly how to get to Camelot.
And also, we need to say that all of this has been being told in a patter song.
That Gary Oldman himself is singing.
This is wild.
He's in full true romance mode in this movie. He is going for it, and it's awesome.
Yes, these are the lyrics. I have a plan. It includes you. You, Juliana, will lead me to Camelot.
I love that the rhyme doesn't finish the phrase.
It includes
it's great.
You, Juliana, will lead me to Camelot, where I will claim all that is mine. It's a patter song, and it makes no sense. In the back of your wagons, my men will all hide. You'll sit up front as the gates open wide. Now watch me create my mechanical army with pride. So, you may be wondering, listeners at home, what's a mechanical army? And then, with this potion I bought from some witches...
Oh, so now we have witches.
Now we just have witches. He bought this little green potion that he throws into the well.
Yeah, he's only got like a little of
He's only got like a little bit of it. He's got like one shot.
But apparently this shit is potent as hell because it can turn an army of fucking like Burger King enthusiasts into fucking Monstars.
Yeah, this is the point at which there's also a little side character that is a little chicken.
Holy shit.
Little chicken that it seems to be in an abusive relationship with an older with an older female chicken who legit slaps him around.
This chicken has such Rodney Dangerfield take my wife energy. The whole thing is every time we see this chicken looks so stupid, and the only thing that's happening is he does something dumb, like falls over or something, and all these other chickens, the women chickens, because I guess he's a rooster, all these female chickens, which may be an oxymoron, but I don't know, because I don't know chickens, come up to him and are like, we're gonna suck your chicken dick. You're so goddamn hot. You're so hot.
Yeah, they're very, like, fawny over him. And then his wife...
They're, like, tickling his gobbler. They're, like, tickling his, like...
Ugh. And he's, like, got, like, a big... And then, like, this big old lady chicken comes in and is like, uh-oh. And then just slaps him across the face. And we say this because... This is important because this is the point at which... to demonstrate how this potion works... Gary Oldman,
Lord Rubar,
takes this chicken by the scruff of the neck and then says this, with this potion I bought from some witches, a drop on this chicken. Also, witches and chicken are rhymed.
Witches and chicken.
With this potion I bought from some witches, a drop on this chicken, a watch as it switches into a weapon.
I think switches is what rhymes.
I think it's a three. I think they're going for like three. Some witches, a drop on this chicken.
If you rhyme it with switches, then people won't even have time to think it with chicken.
Again, it's a complex rhyme. The potion I bought from some witches, a drop on this chicken, a watch as it switches into a weapon.
We should mention that this was all done by Stephen Sondheim.
Well, that's another story. Never mind. Anyway, that I can use at will. Now this chicken can kill. He throws the chicken into this well of this green goo, and then the chicken emerges as a, like, chicken...
With an axe.
Axe hybrid? Mm-hmm. That now,
His name is Blade Beak.
This chicken can kill, yes, I do agree, it can. I don't think it will, because I don't think that's a good use of a chicken. It's just gonna... I feel like an axe is much more valuable than a chicken with an axe face.
It also,
only gonna take out Achilles' tendons. What, is he gonna go around and like...
I mean, fucking A, that's a great thing to have on the battlefield. What are you talking about? If you can train that chicken to just go and slice Achilles' heels on the battlefield, incredibly that's the best valuable weapon ever. What are you talking about? Yeah. That's a D&D character I'd play.
Oh god, that's what I want your next D&D character to be so badly.
Yeah, 15 charisma, 0 wisdom.
Yeah. So basically, when you toss people into this goo, they become human weapon hybrids. So like people emerge with like
the Iron Man suit.
Yeah, it's like either this is them testing out the Iron Giant. so people come out with like, instead of arms, I have giant maces, which like makes life a little difficult for them.
I wanted them to just be like they throw like this one large dude down the well, and he comes out and he looks exactly the same, and they're like. Craig, did anything happen? Did we run out of juice? And he goes, oh no, don't worry. When I gotta go. And he unzips his pants and like a fucking revolver comes out. And just like.
It's a cannon.
Yeah.
His butthole is just now a cannon.
Oh yeah, no, it's the opposite way. He doesn't, it's not a dick that turns into a gun. It's a butt that turns into a cannon.
Why not both, Ian?
Just goes out in opposite directions.
Yeah, you want versatility. Well, he has to go one, he takes care of that, and he has to go the other way. Like, you know, you
don't tell me that if you were on the battlefield in the middle of a huge battle and some dude walks up to you and immediately starts taking off his pants, you wouldn't at least be a little bit like, okay, I kind of just got to see where this goes. And then it's like, oh shit, it's a gun. and then you run away, or you like, you go like, oh, look over there. And he turns around. And you're like, haha, I got him to look the other way. And then like, nope, butt torpedo right towards you.
See, in my head, it's like, oh, you see a guy across the thing. You make eye contact and he's like, oh, just ready. And then he turns around and gets on all fours and just like. absolutely fucking blasts you in the other direction.
He has to, like, cat-cow himself to, like, reload. Yeah.
So wait, you know, so he has to pop the booty.
So yeah, yeah, no, he's got to pop this butt.
That's the reload.
How does he, what's the ammo? Is he just pumping himself full of pinto beans? What's he doing?
You know, I had the same question when I saw a guy whose arm was a fucking, like, crossbow. And I was like, where are those reloads coming?
That's true. And how is he reloading it if both of his arms? If both of his arms are bows.
Exactly. He's got both arms out of commission. How does he just keep going?
How do you unzip your pants if both your arms are bows?
You don't.
You don't? You just pee your pants?
Yeah, you do. Man. I don't think they have dicks anymore.
I don't think they thought this plan through.
They really didn't. I think all of these guys are super eager to do this, and then it seems like it would really suck when they go through with it.
Yeah, they're like a bunch of proud boys, you know?
Oh,
I hate
man.
Them all. Fuck
oh,
them all.
Man. So that's the plan. Kaylee gets away. It's a bad plan. They're going to go, like, and siege Camelot. Kaylee gets away because they're bad at their jobs.
If only they could find out how to get there.
And, like, and Juliana's like, I guess if you give me the map, I'll tell you where to go. And they're like, women, am I right? Bitches be mapping.
Ugh. We have to ask for directions.
I would love to watch these people ask for directions along the way. Like, just roll up, like, at a gas station.
Excuse like, me.
Do you know how to get to Camelot? And they're like, there are a million signs along the way. I can't imagine there aren't a million signs telling you which way to go to Camelot.
Like, no, yeah, no. You know, like, the fork in the road that sends you down the way to the Forbidden Forest? You don't go that way.
You go the other way.
And you keep going the way you're going.
Yeah.
You'll reach it eventually.
You may not get there the fastest way, but you'll get there.
This is Arthurian England. We founded, like, two places.
There aren't that many roads right now. There's one road.
Yeah.
So Kaylee gets away.
Thank God.
She overhears kind of the deal. She's trying to head them off, and then she hears that the sword ended up in the Forbidden Forest. So she's like, oh shit, gotta run right into the Forbidden Forest.
I hope there's no hot hermits here.
Yeah. Hope there's no cute blind dude.
So she shows up there and then, oh god damn it, there's a cute blind dude.
There's a cute blind dude. And by cute, we mean he looks exactly the same as all the other men and looks basically like Jamie Campbell Bauer.
Yeah.
It's a good look for him. She immediately insults him. And basically does the whole, like, what are you, blind? And he's like, yes.
Yeah, he really shows her.
Yeah, he really shows her.
This is a real sensitive script.
Yeah, this script is like, you did not consult one blind person. This seems to think that you can become blind just by getting kicked in the face by a horse one time.
I want to put
I'm not
this,
saying you can't.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me slap this Twitter flag on this part of the conversation. I don't know if you can or can't do that. So, yeah, maybe. Who knows?
I just feel like it's one of those things that, like, you know, it doesn't feel very much like they talk to literally anyone.
I just think it's A, more insane that a teenage boy got kicked in, not even kicked in the face. The way he explains it, this horse fucking tramples him.
This horse didn't die? Yeah, he's fine. His face is fine.
He looks great.
It's not like the fire that fucked him up. It's just like this horse kicked him in the face.
Yeah, he was... Okay, now let's talk about that. It was a fire. Yeah. These horses got scared. One of them fucking bucks back and then clocks him in the face. He'd be knocked out, fire around him. Mm-hmm. He would be fucking killed.
Fucking dead.
Yeah, horse aside.
Straight up dead.
Yeah.
So he had, his name is Garrett. He had aspirations.
Classic English name.
He also knew Kaylee's dad. Kaylee's dad, he's a commoner.
Because he was the son,
from
the first family.
Yeah, he's gotta be. He has to be, right? We don't know anything about him except that he has this father figure that's the same father figure that she has.
Again, it's Arthurian England. There are like six families. They know two places.
Yeah.
Everything is made of rock.
You can still make out. It's not a big deal.
Nobody cares.
He also wanted to be a knight, so they have that in common. It's the only thing that they have in common. And her dad was training him to become a knight one day.
Because he's his son.
Yes. And he wouldn't teach his daughter those things.
Why would he? First of all, he's ashamed of her. she's from a family he never intended.
And then Garrett was blinded and then ran off into the forest to find his way.
Well, out of shame, probably.
Out of shame, because he has a...
Meanwhile, that horse has been running around the countryside blinding people.
That's like the horse's move.
He knows just the right amount of pressure to kick somebody in the head with to be like, you'll see shapes for a few days, then you'll see patterns, soon you'll see shadows, and after that, nothing!
Oh, man. So they immediately take a disliking to each other because she wants to team up, and he's like, bitch, I only work alone. And then he has an amazing song.
Straight up, I get it.
Called I Stand Alone. And that song is a fucking bop.
That song is a Bryan Adams wannabe song.
And you know what, Ian? Agreed. That song's a fucking bop. Anyway, don't let Ian dissuade you. This song is a jam.
I'm glad you enjoy it. I think...
They do this song 3 times over the course of the movie, and it's dope every time.
Maybe it's 3 times, maybe it's 19 times. I don't know, there are some songs in this movie.
This is far from the worst song in this film.
This whole movie is kind of like weird musical edging, where it's like, the first 10 minutes, you're kind of like, are they going to sing? Are they not going to? And then they do sing, and then right after they start singing, someone gets killed. So, I'm not sure that the singing really has a lot of luck with it.
Yeah, I don't know, sometimes the placement of the songs is quite odd. But I do appreciate that he has his own I Want song, and, like, he has somewhere to go, and it is, like, it is a good thing of, like, they've both, like, suffered losses, and they've both, like, been through shit, and
yeah, he's like, I had a dad who just disappeared one day.
I heard it might be at night, we don't know.
Along with my eyes.
Along with my eyes.
They meet, so they have to go through like this.
They end up teaming up anyway, yeah, despite everything he sings in the song.
They're both traditionally attractive. They've got to team up. Also, you know, twitchy-eyed McCrazy eyes is fucking like following them through the goddamn forest.
Yeah, he's on like a little side, like I guess his main caravan is going 95 and he's cutting through the forest.
He's on 3 8-balls of cocaine and 2 Red Bulls.
That's
his
baseline.
Yeah, and he is trying to get there. He's so high that this griffin is talking. Mm-hmm. He sent the goddamn chicken ahead for some reason.
Yeah, I guess the chicken's now, he's like a loyal member of his team despite Putin like not proving his loyalty at all.
No, and then this dude backs out. Okay, let's talk a little bit about this because we're getting into the dragons this way. Mm-hmm. So the griffin is voiced by Bronson Pinchot, as we said. The blade beak chicken is voiced by Jaleel White. Fucking...
who had 30 minutes to spare and just came in, said one line.
Get that money. This chicken, get that money, Jaleel White.
This chicken gains the ability to speak slowly as the movie goes on?
Yes.
Which creeps me out.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Like, by the time he was speaking a full sentence and making a modern reference, I was not a fan.
Which, like, I don't even know if Family Matters was still on in 1998, but...
It seems like an outdated reference even for 98.
Yeah, but he's doing, like, a Taxi Driver reference in this movie. Yeah. He does a Dirty Harry reference in this movie. It's like... this movie tries to Shrek before Shrek, and it doesn't Shrek that well.
Yeah, the chicken is trying to be there for the parents, I think.
What?
Because he's making references to stuff that only parents would care about. Kids don't know what that reference is.
Yeah, but I talked to you about this before, we need to...
Are you feeling clucky? You think kids are going to know what the fuck that means?
That's really funny. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm a parent. No, I'm...
You're appreciating the dad humor.
I'm just done with fucking, like, dumb animals in movies to try and placate children. We talked about this a little bit. I was like, it's the worst thing about Moana, which is a great movie, but there's just this Alan Tudyk chicken character in the movie that truly adds nothing to it. Yeah.
And this movie has 4 of them. I can't stress enough. 4.
And they all have dialogue. Then they travel through like...
Some of them need to be nonverbal. Like, come on.
Yeah, well, the bird is, luckily. Silver Wings, the bird. Arden.
No.
Yeah.
He has a line.
The bird has a line?
The bird speaks.
Well, the bird speaks to Garrett. He talks bird. He's been living in the forest so long.
He's a bird man.
He's like the pigeon man from Hey Arnold. Yeah. He speaks to the bird... And this would be my first sign that, like, maybe I don't trust the hermit in the woods. Is like...
not a fan of Tom Bombadil, not a fan of Garrett.
No, not at all. This fucking Radagast the Brown that's staying in the woods. And he immediately, the first thing he does is like, get out of my swamp. And then you hear like, ah! And he goes, no, I told her that. And it's like... I'd be like, this... Okay, you know what? this guy fucking sucks. I'm going to find this goddamn sword somewhere in the woods.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I also think, like, at times they try to posit he's, like, a Matt Murdock, like, type where he can kind of, like, use echolocation basically to, like, see around. Because sometimes he basically, they forget that he's blind and then he just, like, does shit that, like, he would, because he carries his, like, a stick around.
Yeah.
To, like, feel his way around, to kind of use that as a tool, and then does not use it ever.
Oh, see, I would say he relies on it too much.
At the end of the movie, he does. Yeah. But then there's, like, a point where they have to, like, jump across these, like, floating rocks in a lava pit.
Yeah, it's a forbidden forest, so of course it's magical.
Yeah, and there's no way that he could see where the next one is to jump. He's got a fucking stick in his hand, and he's not, like, checking to see where it is. He's jumping blind over lava.
I think the reason that he uses his walking stick a lot more in the end is because he knows his way around the forest. And he doesn't know his way around Camelot anymore.
Okay, that makes sense.
But
yeah. He's from Camelot!
No, you're right. I guess you could say that walking stick is a bit of a crutch.
But it has to be there so that they can do it for the big dragon escape. They have to use it as a...
Do you want to start talking about these dragons? The Timon and Pumbaa knockoff
that we get? They are Timon and Pumbaa, like, knockoffs, down to the fact that they're a gay couple.
And down to the fact that they literally do a Lion King joke in their song.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know what? Well, let's talk a little bit about it, because the beauty of The Lion King, one of my very favorite animated films, is that Timon and Pumbaa have a vested interest in Simba. And Simba has a vested interest in Timon and Pumbaa. They raise him. They're his adopted parents.
They're his dads.
And he learns most of his philosophy about life. Granted, it may be an unhealthy stoner philosophy, but he learns a lot of lessons from Timon and Pumbaa. So he feels responsible for them when they go back to Pride Rock in the end, and they in turn feel responsible for him when he goes to risk his life in
and
Battle
Scar.
And
there's a real love and a respect and a, like, a connection, and there's stakes in that relationship.
They're more than just silly dialogue and, you know.
It's not like adult Simba just, like, ran into these dudes on the road, and within 24 hours, they're like, yeah, these are my cool friends, Timon and Pumbaa. It's like, no, they're, like, his literal dads.
Yeah, no, this adorable gay couple stole a child that was being circled by vultures.
They adopted a child.
Same difference. I've seen Stuart Little. Anyway, but these dragons, they're not that. They are literally just, well, what if we took all of the jokes of Timon and Pumbaa and all the pop culture references and removed all of the emotional attachment?
And what if we took all the parts of Timon and Pumbaa that are the, like, bickery, like, odd couple-y, like, you bother the shit out of me, and then took out the subtext of, but they actually love each other.
And legit just made it, these two things are physically attached to each other.
They cannot murder each other, and they cannot leave each other. They hate each other, and they are stuck in an endless cycle of absolute fucking hell.
Yeah, this is the Waiting for Godot moment of this movie.
Yeah, this is a circle of hell.
So you were telling me, this came before or after Dragon Tales, also features a two-headed dragon.
This came before Dragon Tales. This came 1 year before Dragon Tales.
Man, talk about the race to the finish on that intellectual property. Two-headed dragons. Woof, somebody had to get there first. I'm glad we reached the apex of two-headed dragons in the year 1999. Anyway, these two, which are voiced Devon and Cornwall. Devon is the long-necked dragon who's voiced by Eric Idle with his traditional British lilt.
He's very fancy. He likes the finer things in life.
He's the Felix. The other one's the Oscar.
He is, in a word, persnickety.
Total Bert.
Yeah.
Real Bert.
And then the other one is...
He's a real Rod. And the other one is Don Rickles, who plays Cornhole. Cornwall. Plays Cornwall. And the craziest thing about these two dragons, besides the fact that they are two-headed dragon, besides the fact...
By the way, someone asked them how they became two-headed, And I believe they say something to the effect of, this is why you shouldn't marry your cousin?
That is exactly what
they said. It is very much implied that they are the product of incest.
Oh, yeah.
So they are an abomination.
He said, they say, frankly, we're the reason cousins shouldn't marry. That's a line in this G-rated kids movie.
And that's not the worst thing that they say.
Oh, no, 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 no.
There's a line later that I legit don't even want to say. And I don't think we should even talk about it because I think it's pretty gross.
Yeah. So that happens. But the craziest thing about it for me was that Eric Idle has a very recognizable British dialect,
mm-hmm.
you know? And Don Rickles has a very recognizable New York dialect.
Yes.
Both of them are doing their recognizable dialects.
Mm-hmm.
How? Lauren, how? How did one dragon get a British dialect and the other one get a New York dialect?
I have to assume
that they chose their own identity.
Yeah.
It's like you choose your own name
they
thing.
They started at a baseline and then they hated each other so much.
I'm New York and I'm Leicestershire.
Like, I have to believe that they chose to diverge so that they could form their own identity because it is the only way that they could reconcile with the fact that their identities will never truly be separate in any physical sense, that they had to find solace in the psychological.
Yeah.
And that's the only way that I can explain the accents.
Yeah.
I think that it's a psychological coping mechanism to help them deal with the trauma of never truly being able to be alone or to be themselves.
They do get a song where they talk about how, like,
a life, song that is 8 years long.
That, yeah, oh my god. They invest, like, Robin Williams time in these dragons.
They think that this is, like, Friend Like Me.
And they're like, you know, the first line of the song is Don Rickles being like, I'd be rocking with the dinos. Dinosaurs are dead.
Yeah.
You'd be dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically goes off to being like, one of them would be an artist. The other one would just be like, I don't know, eating a Philly cheesesteak sandwich and making jokes about, like,
yeah,
the walking sticks on the ladies who walk by. Like, there's no real, like, what does Don Rickles' character want?
I don't know.
I think he wants, like, a stiff drink.
Truly, the thing that remains with me from this number is the fact that it is constantly bombarding us with images of incredible violence.
Oh, and, like, dismemberment.
Because the entire thing is, like, if I didn't have you, if we were separate, if we could separate ourselves from each other. Because the whole journey of this B-plot is for them to learn to work together and to choose to be together in the end. And so this entire scene is them, like, fighting over a chainsaw,
I'm gonna fucking kill myself.
Like, straight up, like, sawing between the two of them, like, rolling a boulder over one half of them. At one point, he beheads Don Rickles, and then, like, plays with the head, and then pops it back on, and, like, a zipper closes to put him back on.
It's a fun fact that, actually, this movie is the prequel to Saw, which Cary Elwes is also in. But yeah, anyway, these two suck. And,
It is incredible scenes of violence. They have,
but it's dragon on dragon violence, so, you know, it's not like.
And it's in retrospect way less disturbing than where they end up in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Cause there's some, should we talk about it now or should we
talk
about it?
Yeah, let's talk about dragon incest. I don't feel the need to bring these guys up again.
Yeah.
They have no bearing on the plot.
Okay, so I don't think I don't think it'll shock you to find out that Kaylee and Garrett fall in love over the course of a single song with no build-up.
Again, Arthurian England. There are 15 people in the world. Everybody fucked everybody.
Yeah, they really try to do a Can You Feel the Love Tonight type thing where they're kind of like frolicking around this forbidden forest, and these two dragons are getting really caught up in the romance, and they're
Remember how in Can You Feel the Love Tonight, listeners, Timon has a great first verse,
mm-hmm.
and then they come back in at the end with the, mm-hmm. you know, and if he falls in love tonight, and
yeah.
and it's like heartfelt, and then it does end on a joke. Yeah. About, like, you know, our pal is doomed. Oh, no. Our trio is screwed.
Yeah,
our trio is
down
to two.
It's a really beautiful, like, song that to me always feels, like, extra touching when Timon and Pumbaa have that extra level of, like, oh, our kid's not a kid anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something really beautiful about, like, the bittersweet feeling of, like, I'm so happy for my kid that he's happy and that he's falling in love, but ultimately that is taking this child that we love away from me. That I think is really beautiful, but I also think there's a layer of it because I truly am like a 100%, I think Timon and Pumbaa are a gay couple, and you can pry that from my cold dead hands. I think there's something to that, like watching them fall in love and be like, oh, this is why we love each other. And they try to like put that on the dragons in this movie, to the point where they're like enacting this kiss along with them. And then as a joke, they have these two dragons kiss.
These two dragons kiss for an extended period of time, and then they do the whole, like, ah, gross, bah, you kiss.
But they play the joke off, like, the joke is that they wanted to kiss, and the joke is that they're denying that they wanted to kiss. That, to me, is how the joke reads.
It's and like, they're brothers.
Yeah. They're the same person.
They're closer than brothers. They're the same person.
They share a body.
They share a dick.
But I guess it's not incest. It's just masturbation.
Audience, if you could see my face right now, I'm genuinely, I don't know how the mechanics of this work. I don't want to pretend to know. I don't want to make an insensitive joke about Siamese twins that I do, because I don't know the mechanics of that. They're not conjoined twins.
That's the thing, is that this is not a conjoined twin situation. Okay. They share a body.
You're right.
They are two heads on one body. This is not a conjoined twin.
There's one set of butt cheeks. There's one set of
there's one set of everything. There's one set of wings. This is a whole thing. They share a body. They are one being.
Well, at what point do you become a separate person? When you have your own brain or when you have your own body?
I think when you have your own brain.
But then they're two people.
Yeah, but they share a body.
Then they're two people sharing a body.
Yeah, but...
You just said they're the same person.
I guess they have two mouths, so they can kiss each other.
Yeah.
But, like, if anything sexual
happened... If you had a second head, would you kiss it?
No.
Why not? What if you got curious?
I guess you can't
kiss... It almost seems like the one's neck is so long so that they can kiss. Also, do other things.
Also, I guess they've been, like...
That dragon's sucking his own dick. What are you talking about, Lauren?
They've been together for like 100 years, right?
They've been together longer than that. He says, oh, I haven't felt this way since I was 200 years old or something like that.
You know what? Then I'm shocked that it hasn't happened before.
Oh, it's definitely happened before. I'm just saying, it's one of those things where every time we get drunk, somebody brings it up and like we're confused as to how to handle it.
I guess it's sort of like, the only thing I can compare it to is like, if you're in love with like a demon that is possessing your body.
You know, one of those scenarios.
Or, like, a ghost that then can take over your body, like...
Again, another super common scenario.
Like, in Ghost. You know the movie Ghost?
Yeah, no, I'm familiar.
If Patrick Swayze's character and Whoopi Goldberg's character had, like, a thing, and he, like, took over her body, that would be a similar scenario, I guess? Because they're sharing a body, but they're two different people.
So it's like...
No, they are two different people in that
scenario. It's a her situation.
I guess.
Where it's like...
But that's not the situation. You're sharing a body, but you're still two people. So I guess they are two people.
They're two people. I ascribe to that there's two brains, there's two personalities. That's two body. Separate. That's two separate entities.
But I still don't know. I don't know. I don't... If anything physical happened, like...
How does something physical not happen?
I guess, yeah. But there's a whole bunch of consent things, because what if, like, oh my god, this is a nightmare for consent.
Yeah. It's like, nah, I was just scratching myself. No, you weren't. You know?
Oh my god.
I was just tucking in my shirt. No, you weren't. We all saw what happened.
Wow. My mind is blown right now.
Yeah.
This is a real chicken or the egg scenario.
It's a real chicken or the blade scenario, you know?
Okay, well, anyway, that time...
Let's go back to why Ruber deserves to have Excalibur.
But I just think, are they brothers or are they the same person?
They're brothers, they're lovers, they're the same, they're... I am he as you are me as we are all together.
Anyway, they kiss and it's weird.
Yeah, no, it makes me uncomfortable.
It makes me very uncomfortable, and it's not the only time. Where even are we in the...
I just remember there's another moment I kind of want to talk about as to why, like, Lord Ruber deserves to win this movie.
Oh.
is at one point when they're in Dragon Country and they're like, you know, kind of behind Kaylee and Garrett, they end up encountering like an actual dragon. Cause that's the joke of these dumb dragons, is that they're afraid of real dragons. And
they have little dumb wings and they can't fly.
Yeah. But Ruber, this dragon gets right up in Ruber's grill, and Ruber straight up like rolls his eyes and punches a dragon in the fucking face, to which I immediately wrote down, you know what? Maybe this guy does deserve to have Excalibur. That's some badassery right there that no other character in this movie exhibits.
Yeah, that dragon scene was rough. This is the big CGI dragon.
Well, no, this is when they go to the ogre. That's the ogre. They're like, oh, we found Excalibur. Excalibur's being used by an ogre as a fucking toothpick because that's funny.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought that was a dragon.
No, they find an ogre.
It's an ogre. Okay.
And in the way the ogres look in this movie is they look like a Windows 95 screensaver.
Yeah, it's a big, like, it's a big 90s, like, a PC game look.
It's awful.
Yeah, it's very bad. It does not seem to be in the same environment whatsoever.
This thing is supposed to be huge and have giant, like, repercussions every time it moves. Every time it adjusts itself, it, like, knocks something over or whatever. The whole screen shakes. None of the characters seem to be reacting to it at all. It doesn't actually touch any of the fucking, like, you know, anything else in the frame. It's really poorly calibrated. It's again, and the animation...
It's a very weak sequence.
The animation in general, and I always feel bad about, like, saying stuff like being critical of animation, because it's something that I really, really don't know how to do, and it's something that requires an incredible amount of patience and time and, and attention to detail. But if I'm to believe any of the stuff that I read about the making of this movie, it kind of backs up this observation that, for me, the animation in this movie is bad.
It's a rush job, very clearly.
It's so jerky.
Because they're just leaving out entire frames, and so it's just, like, very, like, jerky from frame to frame.
Yeah, which is what a lot of the production notes that I read were essentially saying. They were like, there's a lot of attention on this movie in the early stages and in the planning stages and in the storyboarding stages, and then when it came down to making the movie, nobody at Warner Brothers really knew how to do it.
Yeah.
So they outsourced a lot of the work.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's just get back to Camelot at this point. I mean,
we're in the home stretch now. We got to get to our third act.
The two kids fall in love. The dragons make out. It's your normal movie.
And then we're into our third act where they arrive at Camelot. Well,
he gets this Excalibur.
The Excalibur gets taken away, and then his Orm becomes Excalibur.
Yeah, he goes, he's like, well, they'll never take it over my hand! And, like,
and then he uses his witch's brew to, like, make his arm become Excalibur.
Yeah. And at this point, Bladebeak has decided, nah, I'm a good guy now. don't worry, I've got the voice of Steve Urkel, so I'm fine. Jumps back in. I got another question. I'm sorry to make this so sexual. We've just talked about how sexual the dragons are. How does this Blade chicken go down on his wife?
Well, not anymore.
Yeah, but the wife was like, you could tell they had a really sexual relationship, he and the wife.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's done now.
That sucks.
I still don't think that's how it works for chickens.
You're telling me that chicken doesn't go down on other chickens?
I don't think chickens... Do chickens have sex?
That chicken talks! It personifies...
Again, I'm just saying, like, I don't assume that because it has humanoid features like a voice that they have sex the way we do.
So you're saying that I shouldn't assume that my partner... never mind, I'm not going to finish that sentence. this is the end of a very long week. Sorry, we're both very punchy. That bit's not going to go anywhere constructive. that joke was about,
just saying,
that
putting,
joke was turning into 1999 territory.
Stop putting your human conceptions of sex onto chickens. Just saying.
Good point. Turns out this Trojan horse move where they're like, don't worry, we're going to ride into Camelot with Juliana in the front of this cavalcade. Mm-hmm. It's going to work like gangbusters. It does.
Yeah, they end up kidnapping Kaylee on the way because Kaylee...
She's like, goes on ahead, and she's like, sorry, Garrett, like, let's go. And Garrett's like, don't worry, I'm not going. I belong in the woods. Like, I belong in the woods.
Yeah, and then he sings.
It's not my world. It's their world. They don't care about me that I'm blind.
He has a reprise of his I Stand Alone song.
Yeah, to which I want to be like, do they even know you're blind? Like, I bet your mom thinks that you're dead. You got kicked by a fucking horse. Maybe if you go in, they'll be so happy.
I feel like people will be surprisingly chill with it. Like, considering you are, like, you seem pretty cool. You seem fine.
Yeah.
You're a really good fighter.
You seem to be, like, a really good at everything.
You're smart. You're a fighter. You know the territory. Like,
you gotta know the territory.
You gotta know the territory. Gotta get another Music Man reference in there.
The other crazy thing that happens these dragons are like, oh my gosh, if Rubar gets there first with the sword, they're gonna be finished. How do these dragons know Rubar?
I'm assuming at some point they got the, like, they got the briefing on what was going on.
I guess. But these dragons are the first ones to be like, oh, Kaylee's in love with you, sport. Like,
yeah, there's no way they know Rubar. Rubar doesn't know, like, the route. He doesn't know the map. He hasn't been anywhere.
We also don't know what he's been doing for the last 10 years, though.
Yeah. Apparently it's not anywhere on I-95.
No, he's done two incredibly specific site-specific productions the last 5 years. One right after the other. One is Jamie and one is Kathy.
Holy shit. Oh, fuck.
It was him and the griffin just trading off roles.
And only his men have been watching it the whole time. That's been their life. Being the audience.
Nice and hey, Shug's the goddess.
So Kaylee gets kidnapped. Garrett realizes he fucked up.
Classic woman move in these movies.
Garrett realizes he fucked up and is like, all right, dragons, get it together. You have to work together because you have to fly us there.
And they're like, who's going to jerk us off? Are you going to jerk me off? And they're like, no, I'm going to jerk me off. And like, who's going to do it? And before they know it, they're flying.
They finally learned how, like, all they had to do was kiss and they figured out how teamwork worked.
I think it was all they had to do was kiss soberly.
Yeah, they've definitely
kissed drunk once.
They had like a drunken cast party encounter where it's like you get sloppy.
It's like,
drunk.
Oh, I drank too much bog juice tonight. I guess we gotta make out.
So they fly. They go to the rescue. Yeah, the plan to get in this Trojan horse plan works really well. They start just straight up killing people left and right. At one point, Garrett gets shot with, also earlier, Garrett gets shot with an arrow and then magic heals him and no one mentions it.
No one talks about it at all.
We don't know. She puts some leaves on him. There's random leaves and it immediately heals him and no one seems to think that's strange.
This is where this movie's like half-assed environmental message kind of comes through. It's like,
it does feel Fern Gully-esque.
Yeah, it's Fern Gully-ian in a lot of its.
There's part. I straight up thought that, like, I had a memory of this movie, and I thought this was the movie where it had them skipping through the pools with the light.
Nah, that scene is in one movie and one movie only, baby. Fern Gully, the Last Rainforest.
Yep, and it was not. This movie does not have anything near that level of.
No, we don't get it. We don't get Tone Locke playing a lizard.
No, instead we get these like plants that are helicopters that just sort of like spin up into the air.
Which I remember having this toy. I remember having this Burger King toy.
Everyone had that toy.
It was a whirligig, yeah.
So anyway, skipping ahead, I just had to mention that because the way magic works in this movie, we're going to talk about this in a second, makes no goddamn sense. Magic is very weird. What the magic of Excalibur doesn't make any sense. Arthur at one point says that, like, Excalibur is the only thing keeping, like, the nation together. To which I say, you're a bad ruler. If you're fucking sword, it's what's keeping your subjects happy.
He seems so tired without Excalibur. He seems so tired.
Arthur ain't shit.
This is, like, Bond Pierce Brosnan. This is peak Brosnan.
And Arthur is just sort of like, I can't do it myself. Can someone else just fucking handle this, please?
Yeah, he's just like, I've been so depressed without my sword.
I'm tired from vacation.
It's lethargic.
It's kind of like, you get vacation, and then I'm like, I need a vacation from my vacation, you know? Like, I'm just so tired from having fun that I just want to sit on my couch for 2 weeks.
I appreciate that this movie has a solid daylight battle.
Yeah.
Like, the last battle takes place in the daylight. I always appreciate a daylight battle. You can see what's happening.
It's a regular kerfuffle, yep.
Yeah. It ends very quickly. There's a great finale, like a great button on this. Mm-hmm. Rhubarr has, like we've said, attached a sword to his hand, and essentially backs up, like he backs Kaylee up to this rock, and she's like, she touches the rock. The rock kind of like, the leaves on the rock kind of go like, hey girl, don't worry, I got you. And she's
like, okay, magic's got you. And she's like, oh sweet. Dope.
A magic rock's gonna save me. That seems cool. And she like spins out of the way, and he shoves the sword, Excalibur, mind you, right back into the magical rock from which it came.
Mm-hmm. And because he is unworthy, he can't get it back out.
He can't get it out.
And then he like explodes.
And then every
spell in the area is broken.
Yep.
And then the two
yep.
dragons
separate. Oh, all good. We can be lovers now.
And then they embrace like a hug, and then they become one again.
And it is the last shot of the dragons in this movie.
It's not.
Oh, it's not?
Oh, it's not.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, no, it's not. They're headed to a double wedding, baby.
So, yeah.
They separate, and they get what they've wanted the entire time, and then they hug, and I guess it's supposed to be a moment of, like, we don't need to be apart. We want to be together. To which I say, that's dumb. You can still be together.
Oh, I read that as, like, oh, we fucking did it. Let's hug. And then it's like, God damn it. Never mind.
God damn it.
I read that as a mistake.
Yeah, I prefer that reading of it. I don't think that's what they were going for. Every spell is broken and anything physically you want happens, like they separate, but Garrett still can't see?
No.
I just don't understand, like...
Because that wasn't a spell, Lauren, that was a horse.
No, that wasn't a spell that had them together. Were born that way.
I think they would make the argument...
They were born that way.
And I think they could make the argument that incest is a spell.
I just don't understand how magic works.
I wish I could tell you, but I don't know.
This movie does not care.
But yeah, then they both get knighted by King Arthur.
She wears a wedding dress her knighting?
Yeah. We both thought, we're like, oh, this is a wedding. Nope.
It's a knighting. She just wore a wedding dress. And then
because she's married to the work.
Yeah. And then the actual last shot of the two dragons... They're legit looking at each other, and they say something to the effect of, like,
maybe we should kiss just to break the tension.
Exactly! And, like, one of them, like, John Cleese head goes in for the kiss, and the other one's like, no. And it's
Eric Idle.
Not John Cleese.
It's offensive to Monty Python.
I'm sorry. It's been a long week. One of them goes in for the kiss, and the other one is like, no! And they're doing, like, a whole playful game, and it's, yeah, they're gonna be together. They're gonna make out.
Yeah.
They're going to get drunk at this reception and make out. And then Kaylee and Garrett ride off into the sunset on a horse with a sign that says, just knighted.
Yeah, it's like the back half of this movie, not even just the back half of this horse, which looks great, but the back half of this movie gets real Shrekified. There's like a bunch of references to other movies. There's a bunch of like,
a lot more contemporary.
There are a lot more pop culture references at one point. Like the dragons are flying and they're playing like the Superman theme music. The movie had never done that before. Like there's a whole musical about King Arthur.
Yeah.
There are no references to Camelot in this movie.
None.
There are no references to Monty Python and the Holy Grail in this movie.
Nope.
And so there's like, it's weird like what they decide to have references about.
But
it's like,
they do have a Are You Feeling Clucky joke.
That's a great joke. It's top notch shit. Mm-hmm. But that's Quest for Camelot. Let me try and dig up what other facts I've got on this movie. There wasn't a ton. We do the trivia game right now. How much money do you think this movie cost to make?
Oh, fuck. I'm really bad at
this. In 1998.
Especially for animated features, I'm bad at this game. Remind me how much Iron Man cost.
$140 million in 2008, Lauren.
So it's gonna be less than that. I'm gonna say... I guess this is against the rules to ask, like, how much Aladdin cost or something. I will say... 60 million?
Good guess. 40.
All right. Because I was like...
There's a lot of computer animation in
this. A lot of computer animation, and I figured it was in production for a long time, so that would draw out how much it cost.
Yeah.
And then I'm guessing it was a flop.
Not as much. I mean, it was a flop, but yeah, but I was surprised.
Okay. I'm going to say it made 55 million?
Close.
Oh.
38.
Oh my God.
So it was a, like I said, it's a flop.
It's a flop, but it wasn't like a $10 million flop.
Yeah. Something I found out about this movie, or I found out a little bit about the legend, is Sir Lionel.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Lionel was essentially, I'm going to totally screw this up, so Arthurian scholars, like, don't at me,
come
bro.
Come at me.
Also, like, surprised you're listening to this show, but thank like, you. Hashtag Camelot. but Lionel was essentially one of Lancelot's main homies. And dope. Was like, Lancelot's my boy. He got him in there. In the show Camelot, he is the one, in the musical, he's the one who dies and they bring back Sir Lionel.
Oh.
But in the actual Arthurian, like, story, in the history, he is one of Lancelot's main bros. He gets brought on to the Knights of the Round Table. And when the coup, the separation happens because Lancelot mm-hmm. sleeps with Guinevere,
mm-hmm.
And then Lancelot gets exiled, Lionel goes with Lancelot.
Oh.
And then he's like a head general in the battles against Arthur later
oh.
on. So it's just, it's one of the interesting things where I'm just like, why this dude? Why was this dude the one who you were like, this is going to be the father of our protagonist?
Honestly, I think they probably just chose someone that didn't sound like he was one of the more well-known.
They wanted the B-side.
They wanted one who was like legit, but that no one really knows the legend of, that wasn't like Lancelot, that wasn't Sir Gawain, that wasn't like Sir... I'm running out of them. Percy?
Keep going.
I'm having trouble.
I don't know.
Now I'm just about to name characters from the BBC show Merlin, and I don't know if that's accurate at all.
No, it's not.
It's not?
No, I don't know.
They have a Gawain, they have a Percy, they have a, why am I forgetting his name? They have a Merlin?
Do not know.
They have a Merlin. His name is Merlin. They have a Guinevere.
Ah, Merlin named Merlin, eh? Yeah. So the director of this movie, Frédéric Duchau,
mm-hmm.
Has only directed a couple other things. Recently, he directed Racing Stripes in 2004, Talking Zebra movie with Frankie Muniz, where he wants to be a racehorse, and the Underdog film. I don't know if you remember
not
that
familiar.
One. He was an animation dude. He was okay, a head yeah. animator on like the Tom and Jerry movie and Land Before Time 3, Rover Dangerfield, if anybody remembers that movie.
Mm.
And the writers, several writers on this movie. Of course, we said based on the screenplay, or based on the book by Vera Chapman, Kirk D'Amico, William Schifrin, Jacqueline Feather, and David Seidler. So, three of those people, Kirk D'Amico, William Schifrin, Jacqueline Feather, a lot of animated movies, a lot of kids' movies.
Mm-hmm.
David Seidler wrote a movie. He's written several films. But fairly recently, 10 years ago, wrote a movie that went on to steal the trophy for Best Picture at the Academy Awards from a movie that much deserved it. Yes, Lauren, David Sadler wrote the screenplay and the stage play of The King's Speech.
King's Speech!
A movie that I have a relationship with.
Ian has a personal beef with The King's Speech.
I don't care how good The King's Speech is.
Is it because Colin Firth should have won it for A Single Man?
Well, I mean, that's a truth. That's a truth as it is.
He should have won an Oscar for A Single Man.
You can rearrange Oscars Tetris style so much. But yeah, Colin Firth should have won for A Single Man.
Yeah.
That movie, The King's Speech is an okay movie. But The Social Network is a perfect film. It's one of the best movies ever made, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Eisenberg should have won Best Actor. But that is what it is. But let's really just like, I just like knowing that he wrote this movie.
Yeah.
Brings me a lot of joy.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's all of the facts that I could find about this film. Lauren, you have anything else you want to mention about Quest for Camelot?
No.
Really?
No.
I'm not crazy about the music in this movie. I'm not crazy about but the movie is crazy, and I mm-hmm. applaud it for how crazy it is. Yeah. It is so fucking wild, yeah. And I just kind of like...
I also like the opening song, I gotta say. It's, one thing we did forget to mention, in the opening, the knight's song, I can't remember how it goes, which
is it when they're all just screaming, like, positive nouns, like, valor, truth,
yeah!
Family, pride. And then Gary Oldman's like, me.
Yeah, at the climax of the song, they all raise up their shields and refract the sun.
Legit, like in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I loved that. It made me laugh so hard. I loved it. We also talked about how, Ian and I talked about this during the movie, about just like all of these knights gotta bring girls back to the round table, right?
Everybody's gotta fuck in the round table room.
That's like your date the move, where you're like, hey babe, you wanna see something cool? This is the round table.
If somebody, what's up? If I was dating someone and they were like, hey, you wanna come see where I work? Mm-hmm. And it was like, even if it's a place that I don't hold a ton of reverence for, even if they like work in like the Pentagon or something, and they're like, can I show you the Pentagon? And I'm like, I'm fairly certain there are cameras all over this room. I don't know. I'd fool around in that room.
Yeah, it's like the, I think it's like the Camelot equivalent of like, you want to see my jacuzzi? Like,
it's round. Yeah. It's all round.
We don't have a jacuzzi, but we do have a round table. Yeah. And it is cool.
Yeah.
We have a symbol that looks like a three-part Venn diagram.
You're demoted to the kids round table.
Yeah, they have this like three-circle symbol that just looks like a Venn diagram.
It's just three lazy Susans on top of each other.
Yeah, so that's all I had to add.
Yeah.
Because I thought that tickled me.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
it. So in 2020, Lauren, would you recommend this movie?
If you have watched this movie in your youth, I highly recommend a rewatch. I liked this movie. I don't think it's a good movie, but I did have a great time watching it, and I did, all of the songs came back. I think the, like, I Stand Alone song is fun.
I'm shocked, because I find this music to be remarkably unmemorable.
I thought it was so fun. I really liked it.
We rewatched The Prince of Egypt at the beginning of quarantine, and I remembered every word to every single song, and I haven't seen that movie in 10 years.
See, I had never seen Prince of Egypt, and I really enjoyed Prince of Egypt.
It's a great movie.
I liked the songs in this quite a bit.
Sure.
I enjoyed it.
King Arthur is kind of the Moses of England.
I mean, it's trash. The movie is trash. But I do think it is enjoyable trash. I think it does reach moments of so bad it's good.
Yeah.
Of just like the pure audacity of some of the choices of this movie. It is like sometimes horrific to look at and very like cobbled together, but I think there's a bit of a charm to how shitty it is sometimes.
Yeah.
It's at least trying for something. It's rarely succeeding, but it is very fun to watch, and it's on Netflix. Like, where are you going? We're all in fucking quarantine.
And if you're not, you should be.
Like, if you're going somewhere, stay home. Stay home and watch Quest for Camelot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a recommend from me.
It's a fun one to watch if you're watching with other people, especially if you're inebriated in any way. Mm-hmm. I would recommend that.
Or watch if you're sober and just sing along and just remember what joy feels like.
Maybe you need to be sober to remember the melodies of this, but...
I stand alone.
But yeah, I don't know. This is not my favorite animated movie. but I do, I kind of think everybody needs to at least watch it for Gary Oldman's performance.
Yeah,
it is. And for the design of that character, because it really does feel like, oh, this is where Rick and Morty came from. Or like,
yeah,
it feels like an entirely different movie is happening whenever he's on screen.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating movie.
Yeah. And I'm really into it. Yeah, that's what I got. All right, Lauren, like we always do at this time, do you have a modern analog for Quest for Camelot?
Yeah. I want to recommend a movie that is also on Netflix right now, because I really like Quest for Camelot. I like that it's trying to do, like, an empowering, like, young girl power, like, women can be knights, too. And so I wanted to recommend another, like, young adult adventure, odd couple story, and that's Enola Holmes, which just came out recently. That's not a perfect movie by any means, but one that I really, really enjoyed, and I found myself incredibly charmed by. And really liked its main characters, and liked the banter, and liked the mystery, and just had a really great time. And I think that it would be a really good counterpoint to find yourself just kind of like on a Sunday morning wanting to watch a little like fluffy adventure. And that's Enola Holmes on Netflix.
I buy that.
Yeah, it's about Sherlock Holmes's sister who's kind of searching for her. Her mom, if you're not familiar with the setup. If you're not familiar, it occurred to me I should probably tell you what it's about. It's basically like 16-year-old Enola Holmes searching for her mom in like Victorian London and becoming basically a detective in her own right and ends up kind of like against her will, paired up with this, like, young, he's not, like, a Viscount or anything, but, like, this very uptight British posh guy. And she's, like, a tomboy, and they have a really fun little, like, odd couple relationship that I enjoyed quite a bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen that yet. That's on my list of movies to watch. Yeah,
it's really, it's, like, delightful.
Yeah. Man, I'm torn. I'm really, like, kind of scouring to look for something.
I thought you said you had a perfect one right at the beginning.
The perfect one is Game of Thrones. I think Game of Thrones is the most obvious. Maybe I just do Game of Thrones, but yeah. I just think it kind of, like, watch the first four seasons of Game of Thrones. I think it's, like, it is incredibly problematic. My endorsement of that show is not an endorsement of the problematic ideals that show, but I think if you want a show that's A, just got some of the best fucking production value of anything that you've ever seen in your life, really, really great performances for the most part, especially in the first few seasons, and pretty interesting examinations of politics and I just think it's like the first four seasons of that show, four or five seasons, are really, really well done.
Yeah.
And have some really interesting stuff and a lot of fantastical elements like this movie has. And much like this movie, it is based very heavily in Arthurian legend and in Celtic and English mythology that, I don't know. I just think that it. If you've never heard of the show Game of Thrones, check it out, you know?
It's and this one isn't as, like, recent of a thing, but I do think, like, the BBC show Merlin is a super fun, like, so super fun time.
Yeah.
Very silly, like, BBC family show that is, about, like, the younger days of King Arthur before he is king.
Yep.
That is super fun and super silly, and Merlin actually does shit in that show. Also, Brave, I think, would probably be a really...
Pixar's that is a good Brave. One. Pixar's Brave. I like Brave.
It's a pretty good analog, like, similar kind of, like, mythological elements. Also similar, like,
girl actually, power sentiments. Fuck that. Fuck that. Yeah, I'm recommending Moana. Watch Moana. It's a great movie. It's got much better music than this shit. Mm-hmm. It's... The animation's gorgeous. It shows that you can be a precocious young girl and not have to fall in love with a dude. Mm-hmm. It's got an annoying chicken.
So what is this movie?
Yeah, and for every great song, there's still, you know, one or two songs that I'm like, oh, that was in Moana? And, you know, so, like, yeah, that's my recommendation. Watch Moana. It's a great film. Lauren, do you have anything that you have that you want to plug before we end this show?
Yeah, so The Vanishing Act is our other podcast.
It's
I'm sure you've heard us talking about it, unless this is your first episode with us, in which case, The Vanishing Act is our scripted podcast that is set in the 1930s. It's an adventure, comedy, mystery about a disappeared magician and a ragtag bunch of misfits that are trying to uncover the mystery of what happened to him. The first four episodes, which is our first act, are all now out so you can like binge watch the entire first segment of it, which is kind of its own
little contained story within the larger story.
And so, you know, those are super bingeable. All of the episodes are within 30 to 42 minutes. And our next group of episodes is coming out in January, so you have plenty of time to get caught up. It's totally free.
Yep.
You can find us at Vanishing Pod on Twitter or at vanishingpod.com, where we got nominated for 11 awards at the Audioverse Awards, which is really cool. We're getting featured at the Podtails Festival on Tuesday.
The day after this movie, after this episode comes out.
Yeah, so it'll be on the 10th. They're going to be showing our first episode because we were not able to attend in person this year for obvious reasons. So we're really, really proud of the show. Ian's done amazing work writing it. We've all, like, a lot of people who are in it have guested on this show before.
Lauren's done amazing work directing it and editing it together and also writing it. So
yeah. It's very much a labor of love, and we're very, very proud of it.
Yep.
So if you ever want to see us put our money where our mouth is when we bitch about other people's media... We made something, and so...
And write a review, bitch about ours. Like, tell us what you like and what you don't
truly,
like.
Truly, we spend most of our time on this show bitching about other people's work, so please let us know what you think of ours.
Again, if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, I will read it out loud on this podcast. Only other thing that I'm going to recommend, stuff's going to be coming out in the next couple days or so. Guess what, folks? Runoff election in Georgia.
Fuck yes!
For the Senate, two races, We will be supplying links as soon as we know about where you can donate and what action pieces you can do to help Stacey Abrams and her incredible ground forces in Georgia help get wins there. Mm-hmm. For the Democrats that are running for the Senate, so that we can at the very least tie in the Senate.
Yes, we recommend that you donate to Fair Fight Action, which is Stacey Abrams's organization.
That will be linked in our bio on Instagram.
Yeah, we recommend that you donate there instead of for the larger campaigns or for any of these kind of larger things, because it's been proven in this last election that Stacey Abrams knows how to get it done and knows how to get the vote out, and there are going to be tens of thousands of new voters who are eligible to vote between now and the runoff election, so we want to make sure that we get them resources and get them ballots and get them registered to vote as soon as possible, because this can happen. We can do this.
Yep, and we want to make sure that we are living in as fair of a time and place that we can be, so that we can all be bitching about movies and have the privilege of being able to do that. So thank you very much for listening, folks. We hope you have a safe rest of your week. We hope you have a great holiday season coming up. Please be safe. Please wash your hands, wear a mask. And as always, kiss your dragon brother on the mouth. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Bye.